Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Very rarely and occasionally do we discuss the subject of abortion here on this program, but today is one of those days. So my question to you is, where do you fall in the spectrum? The most radical spectrums would be, on one end, to believe that abortion should never be performed, perhaps otherwise to save the life of a mother, but for no other reason. The extremely liberal position would be that a woman should have that autonomy all the way up until the point just before birth, although very few people would agree that that is a reasonable stand, and most people fall somewhere in the middle or on one end of the spectrum. The latest polling indicates that most Americans do favor regulated autonomy over reproduction, simply meaning that at some point they do agree that the state has a vested interest in the survival of a fetus and a live birth. But that also indicates that women should be able to make decisions prior to the viability of a fetus. But a lot of people are conditioned by religion to make their decisions in terms of how they feel about abortion and the political candidates they will support. Today, we will discuss that issue with Dr. Jonathan Dudley. Dr. Dudley will give a presentation open to the community at the Woodlawn Christian Reformed Church Ministry Center on Monday evening, September 30th at 7:30. Dr. Dudley graduated with honors from Calvin College as a biology major and went on to earn an MA in ethics from Yale University's Divinity School and an MD from Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. He is presently a postdoctoral fellow at the Ludwig Center at the Johns Hopkins Hospital and is the author of Broken Words, The Abuse of Science and Faith in American Politics. And he will give this talk examining the role of abortion in contemporary politics and survey scientific and theological principles supporting a unique approach to the issue. If you're interested in attending, and this is free to the public, the Ministry Center is located at 3190 Burton Street across from Calvin College. And again, this is happening on September 30th, Monday evening at 7:30. So we welcome to Common Threads Dr. Jonathan Dudley. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, Fred. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. Now, you've written a what I consider to be just a very impressive book, Broken Words, The Abuse of Science and Faith in American Politics. It came out in 2011, but it is just as relevant today as it was in 2011. And you, in this book, you talk about four key areas where you disagree with the overwhelming majority of evangelicals, at least conservative evangelicals. And I know when we use the word evangelical, we could be talking about a variety of people. Where this is not a monolithic movement. But tell me, what are the big four issues that that you focus on in the book? Abortion, the environment, the LGBT, and what is the fourth, I have it right. What is that?
Evolution.
Yes, that's right. Evolution. Now, we're not going to deal a great deal with the other three because we really want to promote your talk here. But briefly, growing up here in Grand Rapids in the evangelical community, tell us how you were taught to view these four issues.
Yeah, well, I think I had pretty conventional beliefs for a white evangelical. I think folks around me were pretty skeptical of science in general and of evolution and environmentalism in particular, both because of the potential theological implications of evolution as well as the maybe political implications of the environmental movement. Also, you know, very conventional views on gay marriage and abortion. And as I progressed through my education at Calvin and then at Yale Divinity School especially, I kind of began to understand some of the reasons that might support an alternative way of thinking about the issues that, in my opinion, is actually in many ways more reflective of the best of the Christian tradition, that takes into account scientific evidence more rigorously, and that perhaps doesn't pose as much of a threat to the way to core beliefs of evangelicals as they may think.
So tell me how this works. So let's say you're brought up in an evangelical home, or you're a member of an evangelical church, a conservative evangelical church, and you take a look at these big issues that we're talking about, the big four. So let's say that you are opposed morally to abortion, but you don't believe that criminalization of abortion is the way to go in a pluralist society. You believe that any sort of sexual expression, any homosexual affection, is a sin. But you're not gay yourself, and you may believe that gays are damned, but you believe in a pluralist society, and so you have no problem with marriage equality, etc. What would that affect someone's salvation and standing in the church? They're not disagreeing on the so-called sin of these activities. They're simply saying, I'm willing to live in a society where these realities exist. Is that a problem morally in the evangelical community?
Well, I guess one thing I talk about at the start of the book is how the evangelical community has kind of these socially constructed boundary markers that are defined in part by the stance you take on these issues. You know, being pro-life, being opposed to gay marriage, and I think it's a little simplistic, and in fact, many of these boundary markers are somewhat recent and have changed over time. I guess the positions you outlined may be the positions of some evangelicals. It's not really my positions. I don't think gay marriage is sinful, and I don't think evangelicals have to believe that. And I think, you know, to some extent on the topic of abortion, I think it's not necessarily as simple as should it be legal or not, because I think that it depends on the social context to some extent. So to elaborate on that, I think, you know, in a community where it's that makes it very easy to avoid unintended pregnancies, and that provides a lot of support to women facing unintended pregnancies, both during the pregnancy and after birth, then I think the argument for restrictions becomes stronger. But I think in a community that doesn't do those things, and I think we're living in that community, then the argument becomes weaker. So I think it's kind of dependent on that.
Would you agree, now focusing specifically on the abortion issue, would you agree that since the liberalization of abortion laws stemming from the victory of Roe versus Wade, would you agree that the pro-choice community, or those people who believe in legal abortion and reproductive autonomy, did a pretty lousy job over the years in terms of communicating just exactly what they were attempting to do and their relationship with the rest of the country?
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe they have communicated what they have wanted to do, but perhaps they could think about how they approach the issue differently. One, just to give an example, I think one thing that, you know, I think the ultimate goal of the pro-choice movement is not necessarily to help people have abortions. I think it's to help people control when they reproduce. And, you know, there are other ways of doing that than abortion that the pro-choice community supports, and that, in fact, have evidence of reducing the abortion rate, such as long-acting contraceptives. So I think, I think that in some ways, you know, if they emphasize how alternative approaches could help address the concerns of people who oppose abortion, I think they'd probably be more successful.
And perhaps the anti-choice movement has done a good job of painting the pro-choice movement in the colors that they want them presented. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
I mean, for instance, I have never heard someone from the pro-choice movement refer to an embryo or a fetus as a blob of tissue.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And yet I have heard from the other side that that's exactly how a fetus or an embryo is described. The people I know who, say, work for Planned Parenthood, they if they're telling the truth in terms of how they go about counseling women, they're very, very committed to making sure that a woman knows exactly what she's doing when she terminates a pregnancy. That is my understanding. Do you have any evidence otherwise?
Well, you know, I kind of agree with that. I think that pro-life and pro-choice sides of the debate actually have a lot more in common than they realize, specifically about the moral status of the embryo and fetus. I think people on both sides think that human life has intrinsic value starting early in pregnancy, that abortion is at least problematic on some level because it destroys that life. And I think there's, you know, if you look at the actual practices of folks who are pro-choice or pro-life, I think it reflects that belief, and that's a better explanation for their what policies they support than the idea that one side thinks it's just a blob of tissue and the other side thinks it's killing. I think none of those really square with the practices of both sides. So to give examples to support that, so on the pro-choice side, you know, one of the first things that medical workers at Planned Parenthood do, even after performing an abortion, is to make sure that the woman has a contraceptive plan, so that she doesn't need to get a follow-up abortion. Now, I don't think that can be fully explained just in terms of economics or efficiency. I think it reflects on some level a belief that avoiding reproduction with contraception is better than avoiding reproduction with abortion. To give another example, people who do human embryonic stem cell research, which involves destroying human embryos, right now, I believe there's the cutoff where you can grow those embryos in culture to about 14 days. And there hasn't really been much call to expand it beyond that. But you can imagine, you know, if these folks thought it really was just a blob of tissue until some cut point was reached, you know, maybe when the brain develops, there'd really be no moral reason to not attempt to grow it right up until, you know, the day before that cut point and harvest organs and use it for whatever purposes. But people don't generally advocate for that. And I think that reflects this idea that, you know, even among people who are actively involved in performing abortions and destroying embryos, that even these folks have practices that reflect a belief that there's some value to what's being destroyed. On the pro-life side, I would say that you know, the best explanation for the pro-life position is not the idea that abortion is actually killing a person. And I think there are a lot of policies that side supports that reflect that. So there no mainstream pro-life organization, for example, supports punishing women who have abortions. They don't try to, you know, there have been a few more fringe people who have supported that, and Trump famously said he supported that, but then quickly backtracked when he was condemned by these organizations. But that doesn't make a whole lot of sense if abortion is killing another person. In that case, you would think that, you know, if a woman hired a hitman to kill a five-year-old child, I think everyone would agree she should be punished. In fact, our laws would require that. But most pro-life organizations do not support punishment. And even the exceptions they support, you know, most politicians support exceptions for rape and incest, which are hard to justify if you think it's killing a person. But even the exception for the life of the mother is hard to justify. Typically, it's said that, you know, it's self-defense. But the thing is that the mother is not the one doing the abortion. It's a third party. And it's hard to see how you could justify having a third party kill an innocent person to protect someone else. So I think, you know, I think if you actually examine the beliefs on both sides of the debate, you see that it's not quite as simple as one side thinks it's just a blob of tissue and the other side thinks it's a person. I think both sides don't actually think those things. They think they have much more similar beliefs than they realize.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Dr. Jonathan Dudley. He is the author of Broken Words, The Abuse of Science and Faith in American Politics, and he will be coming to Grand Rapids on the evening of September 30th. And we'll have more on that towards the end of the show. You say that in your book, Broken Words, that liberal evangelicals don't have a cohesive message about abortion. Could you elaborate on that? Where do they fall short?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a segment of politically liberal people in the evangelical community, and it hasn't been very successful in building its following or swaying elections. And I think part of the reason for that is that I think there is some reluctance to have an open and honest conversation about abortion specifically. Typically, what liberal evangelicals either say or at least, you know, give the impression of is that they agree with conservative evangelicals about the morality of abortion, but that it just shouldn't be the only issue you focus on. But if you think about it, I mean, if you agree that, you know, most conservative evangelicals will say they believe that abortion is killing a person, and if you believe that, then you have tens of millions of people being killed by abortion over the past few decades. So to say that that's, you know, you agree with that reality, but it just shouldn't be the primary focus, and that perhaps we should weigh issues like caring for the environment over something that would, you know, effectively would be an atrocity on a greater scale than the Holocaust, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so, you know, I think liberal evangelicals, their position isn't really coherent. You know, you could imagine living in Nazi Germany and telling people, you know, the Holocaust is bad, but we should really think about poverty too. I mean, in that context, it doesn't really make sense to prioritize other issues over the Holocaust. So I think they would be more successful if they directly engaged in discussions specifically about the morality of abortion. And not just kind of try to agree, but say we should weigh other things above abortion. So yeah. I think there's some reluctance to just challenge that core belief.
I agree. And honestly, I don't think I have seen a politician who supports abortion rights. I don't think I've seen a politician really give an excellent answer to that. I remember just putting my face in my hands when I heard that ridiculous interchange between Trump and Clinton in the debates, where Trump was saying that, you know, the you could abort a baby just as it comes out of the womb, and Clinton says that's not how it is. That's all she said. That's not how it is. What?
Yeah.
How do you expect people to react to that? Not a good job at all.
Yeah, I totally agree. I remember that moment as well, and just I remember thinking, you know, the impression that she gave in response to that was that, you know, like, I'm proud of my record, and I, you know, not she didn't seem to challenge that depiction as much. Or,
yeah, and if she's to say, well, that's not how it works. Well, then how does it work, Hillary?
You know? Well, I think one thing to say in that, I mean, there it is true that, you know, late term abortion is pretty gruesome. I mean, it's dismemberment, it's crushing the skull, and I think it's, you don't have to gloss over that. I would say that, you know, one thing to point out is that every pro-life organization themselves supports abortion, that specific procedure, if the mother's life is at risk. And I think it shows that even if it's a very problematic procedure in some ways, it's not necessarily self-evident what the right thing to do is.
So what does the Bible say? You say that the Bible is pretty much silent on abortion. Where do we get any evidence that the authors of the Bible may have been opposed to any form of abortion?
Well, I think there's no question that it doesn't specifically talk about abortion. I think where evangelicals tend to focus is the idea that the Bible teaches when life begins. And so there was actually a kind of a concerted effort by organizations like the Moral Majority in the 1980s that kind of started the religious right to promote the idea that the Bible teaches that life begins at conception. No doubt out of sincere beliefs, but I think it's actually a pretty, it's not entirely unprecedented, but the majority of past Christians did not believe the Bible teaches that. And I think the passages that are usually cited to support that view don't actually support it either. Typically, it's Psalm 139 that talks about God forming the psalmist in his mother's womb. If you look at these verses, though, in Psalm 139, it says, "In your book were written all the days that were formed for me when none of them as yet existed." In Jeremiah, it says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you." In Ephesians, it says, "God chose us in him before the creation of the world." And so, you know, if you kind of read these as statements about when life begins, it's talking about before the womb, before the creation of the world. I think you would have to conclude that it begins prior to fertilization. And in fact, I think it's more plausibly interpreted as talking about just God's foreknowledge. There's actually a passage in Hebrews that says, "Levi himself paid tithes through Abraham, for he was still in the loins of his ancestor when Melchizedek met him." So it states that the man Levi was in the loins of his ancestor. And if you're going to kind of take a literalistic approach to these, again, that would support the idea that it begins prior to fertilization. So I think it's somewhat misguided. On the other hand, you have passages such as a passage in Exodus when it talks about a scenario where men are fighting and one injures a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry. The punishment is a fine, but if he kills the woman, then it's life for life. And that's historically been interpreted by many people in the Christian tradition and even the evangelical community as distinguishing morally between the fetus and the mother. And there's some questions surrounding the validity of that interpretation as well, but I think that there's very little basis for the claim that the Bible teaches that life begins at conception. That's not a claim that I know of. I don't know of any mainstream biblical scholar who believes that. And so I think that's pretty problematic.
And in most cases, in most movements within Judaism, they still maintained that difference, that hierarchy between a living mother and a developing fetus.
Yeah, that's true. Partly based on the Exodus passage I just mentioned. So I think, you know, I think the Bible doesn't, you know, historically, I will say in the late 1960s, arguably most evangelical leaders thought the Bible taught that life begins at birth based on that Exodus passage. And that's a pretty surprising historical fact that most people aren't aware of. But ultimately, I think it's better not to put a lot of weight on literalistic approaches to specific verses and to try and engage in broader theological reflection based on broader themes in the Bible. So,
Jonathan, we are coming down to the wire for this edition of Common Threads, but I hope you can join us next week and we can finish this up. But I didn't want to leave without discussing your appearance coming up quite shortly. It'll be on September 30th at 7:30, and you're going to be speaking at the Woodlawn Christian Reformed Church Ministry Center, which is across from Calvin College. The address is 3990 Burton. And you did this a year ago, am I correct?
Yeah, I spoke at Calvin College a year ago. That's right.
And how was your reception?
I think there were some students in the audience that perhaps felt threatened by the message. But, you know, I tried to present it in a non-threatening way. And, you know, I always welcome people to ask tough questions. And they did that. And we had a good dialogue afterwards. But overall, I think it was pretty good.
Wonderful. So. Well, we look forward to seeing you that evening again.
All right.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. My guest, Jonathan Dudley, and his book, Broken Words, The Abuse of Science and Faith in American Politics. Please join us again next week here on Common Threads.